Fatti can. Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording and additional podcasts and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the big book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be a time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So it is my great pleasure to welcome Alana F., who Alana was a newcomer at our meeting a few years ago. And Alana works a very strong program and is such a great example of when we work it, that it works. So Alana is a compulsive overeater. And so Alana, welcome.
Thanks, Donna. Hi, everyone. It's so good to be here. I'm Alana. As Donna mentioned, I am a true compulsive overeater living in recovery, like gratefully one day at a time. I'm going to start my timer here. I get 30 minutes, right, Donna? Is it 30 minutes today? Yep. Okay. Perfect. So I get so excited to talk about program because it's miraculous. Like this thing works. I usually like to tell my story by kind of looking back at the past, you know, where it started, how I got here, what happened, and what it's like now. But I just wanted to, first of all, start with a quick moment to connect with my higher power. I always want to speed into it like a racehorse. So just take a deep breath and just, you know, ask to say something helpful, let go of self, and just share my story. And hopefully I say something that resonates. This thing works. I have been, you know, at the whole weight loss thing, trying to control and manage my weight, manage the food my whole life. And the experiences I've had after, well, through working the 12 steps and the freedom I have on the other side of working those 12 steps and continuing to work them daily. Like just this weekend, I went to the movies with my hubby, and you know, always going to the movies was such a fraught experience, just going to the movies, because there would be those, you know, those snacks, and I was always on some kind of diet. And so it would always be this internal battle, right? Of, oh, I'm not eating it. No, no, no. Or okay, I'm going to do it. Either way, no matter what the decision was, I was always obsessing about the food. Very rarely could I sit and actually enjoy the movie. And so, you know, we go to the movies on the weekend, and he's a normal eater. So he indulges, he gets the snack. And he had to use the washroom before the movie. And so he had his bag of snack and his drink, and he kind of shoved it at me. He's like, here, can you hold this while I just run to the washroom? And I was like, okay. You know, like the ability to hold that. And, you know, I might think like, hey, that smells good. Or I might think, oh, you know, I used to like that. But then it's gone. It's gone. And can I tell you, he got back from, you know, the washroom and we walked into the movie theater. I gave it back to him and I forgot about it. I completely forgot he had that thing and I was able to watch the movie. Like that's just the tip of the iceberg freedom. Before, I'd have to sit on my hands. I like forget about the movie, right? I'm too busy trying to keep my hands under my legs to not be grabby grab with all those snacks. So that's, you know, just the tip of the iceberg, little taste that I didn't even know I was missing in my life. So, you know, if I back up a little bit and I think about how this started, I was absolutely born with this disease. You know, it kind of runs in the family. And my mom, I always talk about this story. My mom jokes that she, as a baby, she couldn't get me on an eating schedule because, you know, I was a very happy-go-lucky, like smiley baby unless I wanted food. And then it's watch out. I would scream. I would howl. And nothing could settle me until she put that bottle in my mouth. And then it was instantaneous, just calm, So there was kind of something there to begin with. And then it just kind of progressed, right? I remember having issues with volume as a kid and just not being able to control myself around different food items and just not even understanding like why. I started to sort of recognize that I was different when it comes to food. Around grade four, that was a very pivotal year for me. I started to recognize that when it comes to special events, birthdays, Christmas, Easter, you name it, anytime there's a big meal involved, I would eat until I was sick. And that happened a lot. And so already at the age of what, seven, eight, I'm negotiating with myself, saying this time it's going to be different. I'm just going to have a little bit, of whatever's being served, and I am not going to eat until I'm sick. This is going to be the birthday for me. I'm like 8 years old, I never encountered other 8-year-olds who had that sort of way of thinking. And I remember too, I would have to very often sleep sitting up because I had really aggressive acid reflux. I had heartburn. Like none of the other kids in my grade four class had heartburn going to bed at night, So that was a little funky. And then I have this distinct memory. I always tell this story, but I was over at a friend's house and we were playing video games. Again, it was around like that grade four time. And his mom brought down a snack in a bowl. And I just dive in, right? Like, hand to mouth, just shoveling this in because that's how you eat this snack. And I look over and he's eating it like one piece at a time. And I'm like, what is this? Who eats like that? But I was intrigued. And so, can I tell you, I tried to eat like that and I couldn't. I could not. It wasn't doing it for me. I wasn't getting that kick. And here we are again. I couldn't focus on the video game because I was so focused on this food. It didn't work. And I thought, okay, something's not right here. But he's the one with the problem, not me, right? Spoiler, I am the one with the problem. I am not a normal eater. He's a normal eater. He can eat the stuff and he can put it down. He feels full, right? Like, and this is the thing about normal eaters and me not recognizing, like, I never had the vocabulary or the knowledge to understand that I am not a normal eater. I have a disease. I am a compulsive overeater and I have this twofold disease. I have an allergy of the body. When I ingest certain foods, I react. And I don't necessarily break out in hives. I don't need an EpiPen. I break out in uncontrollable cravings. Like this is why I was a binge eater. One of the reasons I was a binge eater. And then coupled with that, I've got this physical allergy that's a manifestation, but I also have the obsession of the mind that makes me constantly want to go back to it. And it's constantly deluding me into thinking that I can control this thing. This time it's going to be different. I'm going to just have one of that favorite thing that I love, and it's going to be fine this time. No problem. It was never fine, and this thing always got worse. But I did not have the vocabulary to know what was going on. But I came close when I was a teenager. So this thing progressed, and I sort of started to dabble in like restricting as a teenager. I remember one time. And you talk about like the obsession and the insanity. And I had a hard time grappling with that when I first came to program. I'm not insane. I just have a bit of a problem with food. Are you kidding? Okay, insanity right here. We had gone to visit some family members and I had one little piece of chocolate, one little piece. And I was in such a restricting zone at that point. I came home and I pounded the treadmill for like 30 minutes. Other girls I knew in class did not do that. They weren't constantly obsessing about it. But at one point as a teenager, I thought, aha, I think I've got something. What if I pretend I'm allergic to junk food? What if I pretend that if I eat that thing, then it's going to kill me? Like maybe I do need an EpiPen. And I was so close, right? I had that physical allergy piece. Little did I know I didn't need to pretend. I have an allergy. It's an abnormal reaction to this stuff for whatever reason. When I eat certain my trigger foods, my desire for it, the more I eat, the more I want. It's like proportional. Whereas like other people, they can eat something, they can eat the same thing, and it's an inverse relationship, right? The more they eat, they're satisfied, the less they want. That is not what my scales look like. More is more is more. And you hear this often called the disease of more, right? And as I've sort of experienced my recovery in the steps, I've seen like I'm a compulsive person. So the food is just one symptom of this disease, but the disease is in my head. I'm trying to fill a hole. I struggle to, live life a little bit. Because I started turning to the food at such an early age, like I said, in high school, I was using the food like for to comfort myself during exams. I would study in the kitchen and it'd be up and down, into the food, because I couldn't handle the stress. And the food was like that soothing balm. But that means I didn't actually learn how to handle stress. And so I don't have these coping mechanisms. And so what ends up happening is I develop maladaptive coping mechanisms, which some kind of say is our character defects that we talk about in step four. So yeah, and then into my 20s, again, just sort of like being really active, the weight never manifested. Although I always was bigger, I was always bigger than my peers. And looking back, I thought I was so big. I had some body dysmorphia too, right? And it's that classic, every year you look back, you say, oh man, I wish I looked like that again when I thought that I was big, right? But that's this disease too. It lies to me. I part of this disease, the sort of insanity in my brain is my view of the world is so warped and skewed. My perspective is totally off. And that kind of buckets into the dishonesty piece when we're thinking about character defects. I think it says somewhere in the big book, like the truth, you couldn't see the truth clearly anymore. Like the false kind of became my reality. I really couldn't see clearly, but I was also living in a food fog. So there was that. So yeah, into my 20s, I graduated, I got a job, I met my hubby, and life started getting lifey, right? I had responsibilities, we moved in together, and here I am, pretty raw, with like not a lot of coping mechanisms because I've used the food. I've used the food to manage the unmanageability that I didn't even realize was going on in my life, right? Step one, I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable. And I can look back and I can see that. So as soon as life started ramping up, so did this disease. And it got to a point where my partner, he would see that I was binging. You could see it coming a mile away. And we didn't know what the heck was going on. And so he would call it food monster. We would be like cooking or making something. And like I said, he could eat just a little bit and put it down and he'd be okay, not me. And he would see that and be like, uh-oh, here comes the food monster. And like on one hand, it's like, oh, ha ha, funny. But on the other hand, it's mortifying. And to not know why I'm doing this and to not be able to stop. And so, fast forward like a couple more years, and this disease, it's progressive and it's fatal. It gets worse, it never gets better. And I saw that firsthand. I packed on like 85 pounds. And I had asthma as a kid and it went away in my teens and my 20s, and it was back with a vengeance. I couldn't even go for a walk without my inhaler. I wasn't living, and I started to retreat, right? Another part of this disease is isolation. I didn't want to be with anybody. I didn't want to see anybody. I certainly didn't want anybody to see me. And so, my bottom came, when my partner, he pulled me aside because I couldn't show up. I was so in the food and I was binging almost every night at that point. And you wake up with a food hangover and I don't sleep well, when I've binged like that at night. And I was having a hard time showing up to my job. I couldn't like return my friend's text messages. I couldn't do chores around the house. How was I showing up for him as a partner? How was I showing up as an employee? How was I showing up as a friend? And the answer is I kind of wasn't. I wasn't. And so he said, he's like, Lana, you need to, take care of yourself and put into yourself as much as you put into me. And that was jarring because I knew, okay, well, how much am I actually putting into this guy? How much am I putting into my relationship? My capacity was zero, and I knew something had to change. And so, it's so funny. I came into program 3.5 years ago, and I was completely agnostic. Like I did not have a spiritual practice. I didn't disbelieve, but I didn't believe either. I just was kind of in this limbo. But since coming to program, I've very much developed a relationship with a higher power who I can now call God. But I couldn't say the G word when I first came to program. Totally freaked me out. But it's really progressed now. And looking back on my experience, I can see God's fingerprints all over my journey. And you know, like I said, struggling with this my whole life, I've tried it all, and it's almost cliche, but I've done the paying ways, I've done the calories, I've done the, you know, don't combine the foods, you know, don't eat your carbs with your proteins, and I've tried everything and nothing worked. I can't tell you how many times I would go back to the paying way because I didn't have anything else. So a couple years before I came to program, I heard a family member say like that they were doing something called Overeaters Anonymous. And at the time I was on a paying way and I had lost about 20 pounds and I thought, this is it. I've got the answer. I'm never going back, right? Another one of the lies my disease likes to tell me is I've got it this time. And and so I heard this Overeaters Anonymous thing and I really wasn't familiar with 12-step programs, but I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I thought, this kind of sounds like AA, and that sounds serious. Oh, I don't need anything that serious. Thank you very much. I just kind of like disregarded it. And I didn't think anything else of it until 2 years or so later when I'm at my bottom. And my partner and I, he had that conversation with me. And I was just like so beaten and so humiliated and so confused. I don't know what to do. And this like little voice out of nowhere, I don't know, said, Alana, you need to get to an Overeaters Anonymous meeting. You have to get to a meeting. And it was during the pandemic. So, you know, you log on to Zoom. I didn't really have much of an excuse. But like, where did that thought come from? You know, one of my favorite sayings in program is it odd or is it God? Right? And like, come on. So I kind of dragged my feet a little bit, but I went to a meeting. I went to my very first meeting. Totally unfamiliar with 12-step programs, but I thought, ah, let's give it a try. What do I have to lose except wait, you know? And I walk in and I hear, you know, this talk about a higher power. And I thought, okay, I just thought I would walk on in and you're going to tell me what to eat, when to eat, what exercises to do, and I'm going to be on my merry way. Thank you very much. But how is that any different than what I've been trying my whole life? So this meeting that I went to, it was an OA 12 and 12, 12 step and 12 tradition study. And they were talking about step four was the focus that week. And it was the sex inventory. And here I am sitting here being like, oh my gosh, why are we talking about this? And how is this going to help me fit into my size 8 pair of jeans? But you know, there was something in that room. Hearing people who spoke my language, that knew the struggle, something kept me. I did really want to run away because I was confused and I didn't really understand the 12 steps, but I stayed. And so as I look back, I sort of see my higher power just nudging me forward gently. It's been a very slow and gradual, steady progression for me and my relationship with my higher power too. So here I am. I'm in the rooms. Now what? So I heard early on, you know, I'm very, very lucky because I landed in this meeting. Oh, it has such a special spot in my heart, this meeting. And I heard about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I didn't really struggle that much. It checked out for me. You know, I started reading it. And, you know, the thing is, okay, when I'm reading the big book, do I like eat like Bill ate or drank? And do I think like Bill thought? And it's like, yes, check, check. I could really see myself in those behaviors and in those thought patterns. So I got a sponsor and we started working the steps right away, working the steps like my hair is on fire. And this is where I learned that I have this twofold disease. And the first thing I need to do is figure out what those trigger foods are. What is it that's triggering this allergy that's creating sort of like this insane loop in my head, and keeping me in bondage? And I got to put those down because those are keeping that like the chatter, right? And I didn't even realize what a slave I was to this chatter in the back of my head my whole life, triggered by this food. So you put that down, and then I work the steps quickly because what it's uncomfortable and it's really hard putting the food down. So that's why, you know, I had to work the steps quickly. And I started to realize early on, like, okay, this is work. I don't love. I don't want to work. I just want this magic pill, right? but that's not how it's going to work. And you know, there's this idea that I like to talk about, and it's like wanting to do something versus being willing to do something. And I'll tell you, I didn't really want to do any of the steps, but I was so miserable coming in here. There was nothing else for me, so I was willing. I was willing to do the work. And you know, my sponsor would basically say jump, and I would say, all right, how high? Like, I got, what do I have to lose? So step one was pretty easy for me to come to terms with, because my life was kind of careening out of control. It's like, yeah, I am powerless over the food. My life is unmanageable. Okay, but now I have to turn my life over to the care of God, as I understand God. What does that mean? But my sponsor told me, she's like, Alana, you just got to start praying. And that gave me the willies, because I don't even know what is this praying thing? What do I do? How do I do it? She said, just start, you know, act as if. And I looked around the rooms and I could see this magic, you know, this alchemy working for other people. So again, I thought, what do I have to lose? I'm willing, right? I might not want to. It feels uncomfortable for me, but I'm willing, because there's only two options. I either keep moving forward in the steps, or I go back to the food. And I can't. I cannot do that. So, you know, like I said, my experience and my relationship with the higher power has been this gradual unfolding. So at first, I saw the what was going on in the rooms, and I thought, okay, I can get behind this. There's something here, and it's working. And then I sort of started to look to nature. You know, there's a beautiful tree in my backyard. And I thought, that tree, it's part of a power that's higher than me. It was here before I was born, and it'll be here long after I'm gone. Nature is a power that's greater than me. And I started to sort of plug in, right? Because that's what I need to do. I'm powerless over the food. So where am I going to get this power source? I got to plug in to something. And as soon as I started being open, just a little bit of willingness, just open the door. And I think it talks about that in the big book too. All I need is a pinch of willingness. I started to get some visuals. I'm a very visual person. And one day I got this visual of prayer, like I'm tuning a radio and I'm just dialing into that right spiritual frequency to sort of like hone my inner resources. And I thought, okay, this is something I can work with. Spiritual frequencies, check. And that sort of began the progress for me, the progression. So I was able to do step three, and with step three, I made the decision to just keep on keeping on with these steps, because again, I have two options. I have keep going with the steps or go back into the food for me. And so step four rolls around, and now I have to do an inventory and look at, like, you know, my defects. And then step five, I have to talk to somebody about it. Oh no, thank you. Hard pass. Except I can't pass, right? I'm willing. I'm in this. I don't want to do it, but I'm willing to do it. And it was, you know, it was a relief to get some of this stuff down on paper. And that's when I started to realize, like, ooh, there's something deeper going on here. Like, I eat in part to scratch an itch, because there's this stuff going on in my brain that is so uncomfortable for me that I can't sit with it. And I have nothing, I don't have anything to do with it. I don't have tools in my toolbox. So step four gave me an outlet. Step five made me realize, you know, when I laid some of the darkest secrets I've never told anybody before to another person, and they said, you know what, Alana, me too. Yeah, I've heard this before. The sense of relief, you know, I don't have to carry this with me, because I wasn't, not only am I in bondage to the food, am I in bondage to the self, I was in bondage to my past and to all of this buildup that I've accumulated over the years. And I also learned that with my higher power, as I'm plugged in and sort of like building this, like, I think about it a little bit like one of those solo party cups. You know, I come into the steps and my spiritual party cup is empty. And each step, the cup fills a little bit and a little bit. By the time I'm in step 12, my spiritual cup is full and I can share this cup with other people. And so going through the steps, I'm learning that my higher power can show up for me and help me get through big, scary things. So yeah, I kept on. And step six and seven, okay, I see these character defects. So what is the opposite behavior? You know, how I'm powerless over these defects, just like I'm powerless over the food. So I have to partner with my higher power. But what can I do to practice? What are the alternate behaviors that I can sort of start practicing? And can I be aware of when these defects are coming up? And another thing my sponsor told me, and this is something I sort of struggle with is humility. You know, once I'm aware of those defects, I see them coming up all over the place, and frankly, it's gross. And I don't want them anymore. I just want to like shake them off like a spider. But it's not my job, right? Sometimes I have more learning to do, and other people can be helped by some of my character defects. Like the removal of the defect is above my pay grade. That's my higher power. And so now here we are at steps 8, 9. And so you're telling me I have to go back and apologize to some of these people that I've wronged? No, thank you. I'm out. Except I'm not, because what's the alternative? I can't go back to the food. So I keep going. We persevere. Even though I don't want to, I'm willing. And yeah, and I did it, you know, and some of them, they were, my experience was all quite really good. I had some good amends, but they weren't super comfy. You know, it was hard, it was scary, but my higher power helps me do scary things. And the load, the burden that was, you know, released after making my amends. And it's an ongoing process too, right? Another thing that I've noticed come up for me is perfectionism. And there's this sense of urgency. I want to get this all done, check all the boxes, and basically achieve, you know, like I want to win at recovery and be done. And it's never done. Always more is revealed. And as I progress in my recovery, I become ready to see some of these things that I couldn't see earlier in my recovery. So there's always deeper to go. And now, you know, having come through that, steps 10, 11, and 12 is where I live my life. Well, I kind of live in all of them. Step 6 and 7, I've really been focused on recently. But yeah, step 10, I keep watching for those disturbances because that humility piece, right? Like I recognize when these disturbances crop up, not if, but when, because I'm human and I'm going to get disturbed about stuff. And so, you know, I can do a quick inventory. I have tools now to be able to deal with my disturbances, whereas I didn't before. I just went straight to the food. And for the first couple of years of my recovery, I was not hesitant isn't the right word. I guess I was nervous, because I felt like my recovery was untested. You know, like things were good, life was good, more or less, until, you know, life started happening. And I have been able to, you know, with the 10th steps and the support of my fellows and this design for living that really works. You know, my grandpa had a heart attack, and he's one of my favorite people, and he had a heart attack about a year ago. And that was really hard, but he came through it, and I didn't have to eat. I could be present and show up and be with my family. And just recently, you know, my dad has been having some health scares, and that's been really scary. And I've been able to show up and be present. And one of my favorite steps, step 11, because that's where that continued growth with my higher power, the relationship comes in. And so this program, the thread that's been weaving through all of these steps is the reliance on a higher power. And so it's a spiritual program, which is so surprising. I did not realize when I first came into the rooms that that was what it was going to be. And now I need to grow in that relationship. And so, you know, in the mornings I meditate, I do spiritual readings. Throughout the day I check in, I try and do a meditation over lunch. And in the evening I do my evening review. How did today go? You know, what did I do well? What could I have done better? And I share it with a buddy. And step 12. So again, here we are. When I got to step 12, a sponsor somebody, what do I know? I don't know anything. I'm so new with this, right? Like, no, thank you. I'd rather not. Again, I'm willing. And we know, like, I have to keep living in the solution, and I have to work intensively with another compulsive overeater if I'm going to stay recovered, because this brain wants me to forget. It wants me to go back into the food, this disease. And so I need that constant sort of like working through the steps with another. I need that constant getting out of myself and into service and supporting other people. You know, I do service on meetings. I do outreach calls. I love outreach calls. Give me a call anytime. I love outreach. And I work my tools, right? I go to my meetings, and I heard once, the tools are like, so we have the steps, and the tools are like the banister along your steps that sort of support you as you're walking up the steps. So I've got to keep working my tools. And just the joy today, I have about 2 minutes left, so I'll wrap up. Being free from that obsession of, oh my gosh, what am I going to eat? What am I going to wear? like all of this chatter, right? I don't have that anymore. I can show up for people. Like I proactively think about, okay, like what can I do for my partner today? What can I do for my friends? When I was in the food, I didn't have space for that. And yeah, the connections I've made, the friendships I've made in this program, you know, it talks about in step 12, like the joy of seeing a fellowship develop around you and to be with people who get me. What a gift. What an absolute gift. You know, I've maintained like my 85-pound weight loss for about 3 years. Miracle. I never could maintain, you know, that level of weight for more than a couple months before. So this thing works, you know, and it's not all sunshine and roses. There's always challenges because there's always going deeper in this recovery, right? You know, balance is something that I've been working on recently, and I know that I need to just lean in to my higher power because as a compulsive overeater, I'm a person of extremes. And so I need, it's a step two thing, right? I need God to give me that sanity. And you know, another saying that I absolutely love, and I think I'll pass on this is, you know, I've surrendered my food as a compulsive overeater, but now I need to surrender my life as a person. So this needs to like permeate. And that's the joy because I can take these steps and I can take this experience and really just like work it in all areas of my life. So I'm so grateful to be here, back at my home meeting and seeing all of these friendly faces. I'll pass. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much, Alana. What a powerful story of recovery. Thank you.